the whole theology of gravity.
Okay, so the title of this workshop is Gravitational Lensing: Insight into Galaxy Formation and Evolution. And therefore, I choose two related subjects to tell you about. The first is using the lens redshift distribution test, using lensing statistics to constrain the galaxy mass evolution, and more accurately, constraining the evolution in velocity dispersion of galaxies. And the second topic is something I'm currently working on, is using gravitational lensing to study the host galaxy of an high redshift quasar. So the talk layout is as follows. I will first tell you about the lens redshift distribution test, and I will show you that this test is extremely sensitive to velocity dispersion evolution of galaxies. We'll discuss a little bit on sample selection, and then I will use this test using a small sample to constrain the galaxy mass evolution. And finally, I will tell you about my efforts to increase the sample size, and at the end, about the second topic, which is, I will just briefly mention, is the probing the quasar host galaxy of SDSS 1004. So, I think there are no, just for the sake of non-lensing persons, if there exist here, I don't know, we have an observer and a source. If we add a deflector, the light rays from the source will be deflected, and we'll see an image. And the deflection depends on the mass distribution within the lens, and the relative distances between the observer, source, and lens. And there is a very simple connection between the angles here. Alpha is the deflection angle, theta is the image's position, and beta the impact parameter. And this is called the lens equation. And since this is a nonlinear equation, in some cases we may have multiple solutions of this equation, and therefore we have multiple images of the source. And again, the image position depends on the mass on the relative distances between the observer lens and source, and on the total mass and mass distribution within the lens. Fortunately, at least it seems that galaxies has an isothermal profile, and we know this from the flat rotation curve of spirals, and from lensing work on ellipticals. And isothermal profile has several nice properties. First, the Einstein radius equal exactly half the image separation, and second, the Einstein radius is proportional to the velocity dispersion squared. So these properties make our life easier. Make our life very easy. So what I'm going to do right now is to calculate a property known as the lens redshift distribution that was introduced in 1992 by Kochanek. And the idea is very simple. Given the source redshift and the image separation of the source, we can calculate what is the probability to find the lens in a given redshift. And this probability is given here. And it depends on the cosmology through the proper distance interval. It depends on the properties of the lens and cosmology through the cross-section for lensing. And finally, it depends on the galaxy mass function through the number density of lenses in the universe. And there are two ways to introduce into this formula the galaxy mass function. First, we can use directly the velocity dispersion function of galaxies. And the second method is just using the Schechter luminosity function and the Faber-Jackson relation. And I can tell you right now that the two methods will give us, in this case, will give us exactly the same result. So, and there are two ways to show that the scatter in the Faber-Jackson relation has no effect on the result of this study. And finally, I'm introducing evolution into the...
Wait, So is that actually, like, well, is that actually true? I mean, because the paper by Sheth et al., I think, you know, that was measuring the velocity function from Sloan, you know, they found that it was, I thought, not consistent with the velocity function, you know, transformed into a velocity function if they had assumed that there was no scatter about the Faber-Jackson relation.
Again?
So Sheth et al. Measured the velocity dispersion function from Sloan, right? Okay, they also know the luminosity function for the elliptical galaxies. So had they just transformed the luminosity function for ellipticals, assuming no scatter about the Faber-Jackson relation, they would not have recovered, I think, their observed velocity.
Okay, that I did two separate tests. First, I used directly the Sheth relation. And I get the same result, but it might relate to the nature of the problem, and not it's. And the second test is just introducing a scatter into the Faber-Jackson relation. Maybe I will talk about it in a minute. Okay.
Depends, I guess, a bit where the problems arise. If it arises in fake end slope, there's no Lepton crossing.
And also, I use the 2DF luminosity function, so. Maybe this is the part of the problem. I don't know. So I introduce evolution into the first. I introduce evolution parameterized by P to the number density of galaxies, and I introduce evolution to sigma star, which sigma star is the position of the exponential break in a Schechter-like function of the velocity dispersions. And now we can see an example. We have a quasar at redshift 2.7, an image separation of 1.1 arc second. And given the source redshift and image separation, we can calculate the probability to find the length in a given redshift. Here we can see the probability is a function of redshift. Again, the quasar is at redshift of 2.7 here. And of course, we can calculate this probability to other kind of parameters. For example, we can change the cosmology, and we can compare the measured redshift of the lens with the probability distribution. And now we can change the parameters. For example, we can calculate the lens probability distribution for other cosmologies, or introducing a galaxy evolution, and we will get different curves, and we can compare the observed redshift of the lens with the different probability distributions.
Take into account that the velocity dispersion is probably biased time for the lenses.
I'm taking this into account through the cross section for lensing.
Okay.
It's all entered through the probability function we saw before. Sorry?
The magnification bias.
There is no magnification bias in this test. I will talk about it in 2 minutes. Okay. So I would like to show you some sensitivity tests regarding this lens redshift distribution test. So what we have here is the probability as function of redshift, and I just vary several parameters, and you see the different probability curves. And the first two plots, this one and this one, show you what happens if you change the priors in the lens redshift distribution test. Namely, if we change the source redshift, which we are using as prior, and the image separation that we are using as prior. And the scatter in this curve is very large, but we don't care about it because we are using these parameters as priors. And finally, you can see here, for example, what happens. All the rest of the plots are for source redshift of 2 and image separation of 1 arc second. And here you can see what happens if we change the fiducial value of sigma star at redshift 0 by about 10%. No big effect. You can see what happens if you change the cosmology. And the dotted line here is for omega lambda equal 1 in a flat universe. And you can see that unless the dark energy content of the universe is very large, close to unity, this test is not extremely sensitive to cosmology. Marusha talked about galaxy types. I'm using a mix of galaxy types. I'm using all the galaxy types, and you can see here what will happen if you use only one type of galaxies. For example, if you use elliptical in the dashed curve and spiral in the dotted curve, and you can see that the mix curve, which is the solid line, is not too far away from the elliptical curve, but very far away from the spiral. And this is simply because elliptical simply dominates the cross section for lensing. Sorry. And this what happens if we change alpha in the Faber-Jackson, in the Schechter luminosity function, and gamma, the power law slope in the Faber-Jackson relation. This is changed by 10%. Okay, the last two parameters, one of them is the most interesting, are the introducing the galaxy mass evolution and the number density evolution. P here is the galaxy number density evolution, and U is the galaxy velocity dispersion evolution. And you can see that this test is actually, I think it's extremely sensitive to evolution in sigma star. And that's maybe one of the best method I can think of to measure galaxy mass evolution. And the only problem that we can apply this test to redshift of up to redshift of 1.5 top, and because this is the typical lens redshift of lenses.
But that's cross section goes to sigma to the power 4. That's one. I mean, if you actually take the power 0.25 or something like that, then the effect is probably equivalent to the change in n star, because you're basically changing the amount of mass in between you and the...
I don't understand what you're
I mean, the effect is so strong because the lensing cross section goes to the fourth power of sigma,
right,
linearly with n.
It's even more than that, because the sigma star appears in an exponent, and when you change sigma star to some power, the exponent changed by a lot. The exponent cut, which set the...
So the typical sigma stars are like 100 or something? Or
The sigma star... okay, here I use... sigma star I used here is 225 kilometers per second for elliptical and 144 kilometers per second for spirals. This is somewhat high, but I will...
That seems incredibly high.
Yes, but I will show you some tests about it at the end, okay? I use this test also to put a limit on the fiducial value of sigma star at redshift zero, so...
Which you can then compare to the direct...
Right.
Which I thought was much lower than 200. That was over 100.
It's not 100 or so, I think.
Maybe.
But, as far as I remember. Okay, so what done in the past? Again, this test was introduced by Kochanek in 1992, mainly to measure the cosmological parameter, and he used a sample of four lens quasars and found a lower limit, an upper limit on the cosmological constant, and he showed that it's smaller than 0.9 in the 90% confidence level, so it's actually very very weak test for cosmology, as I showed you before. And next, in order to apply this test, we have to select a sample. There are two major advantages to this test over the classical lens statistics. First, the image separation is used as a prior. Therefore, we don't care about the angle of selection completeness and angle of selection function. And the second issue is that there is no magnification bias in this test because we simply use all the known lenses. However, there are several problems, but the biggest one is the missing redshift information. In order to apply this test, we must know both the lens redshift and source redshift. In quasar cases, it's very easy to measure the quasar redshift, but the lens redshift typically is not so easy to measure. And there are several ways to avoid this problem. First, for example, Kochanek truncated the redshift probability distribution beyond the redshift at which the lens galaxy become too faint to have its redshift measured. However, this by itself introduces a bias because we know that the luminosity of a galaxy evolving with redshift, and the luminosity depends on the cosmology through the luminosity distance, so it's a subtle point. The way I use to overcome this problem is just by introducing a source redshift cut. I just selected all the lenses in which the source is has redshift below 2.1. And last time I applied this test, it was 3 years ago, and I had a sample of 14 lenses. And again, the problem, if you want to introduce a source redshift cut or do something about it, think about it like that, that if we are living in, for example, in a universe with a large cosmological constant of about 1, then the typical lens redshift is higher, and therefore it's more difficult to measure lens redshifts. So we are introducing a bias into this test. And by cutting the source redshift, we are using only lenses which typically are found below redshift of 1, which it's possible to measure using current instrumentation. And here you can see the probability distribution, the redshift probability distribution for several lenses. This is bigger than the entire sample. For example, I removed from the sample several lenses that are influenced by cluster lensing, like 0957, and there are other subtleties. And now we can compare the observed redshift of the lenses with the probability distribution, and we can calculate, multiply the probabilities and calculate the likelihood, and change the parameters in the problems. And here are some results. For example, for cosmology, here you can see the log likelihood as function of cosmological parameter for flat universe. As I told you, this test is almost blind to the cosmological parameter unless it's close to unity. Yes, I tested it through Monte Carlo simulations. So
you expect
the chi square in the problem is per degree of freedom is 1. That's what you mean? There is no chi square, but the equivalent.
So you have mean for every system, and we did the test also with SLEX, where I think if you do a cumulative distribution of probabilities, it should be uniform distributed in that space. And so you can test whether actually your distribution of redshifts is consistent with the probability distribution, even though you have a separate probability distribution. Every system, you only have one.
Yes, so I checked this in another way. I checked it using Monte Carlo simulations. I will explain it in a... it goes like that. You can generate a mock sample and calculate the log likelihood, the value of the log likelihood. And I see that the typical value of the log likelihood in a perfect universe through my mock sample is about, in this case, it's about 4. Okay, so this is the way I check this.
The other question is, I'm still a bit confused. You assume that for a given source redshift, so you can put your lens at different redshifts, so you get different probabilities, right? Mm-hmm. Integrating or effectively assuming that every that within the lensing cross-section, wherever you put your source, let's say in the source plane, you would actually observe that particular lens. That's your implicit assumption, right?
Yes.
Is that?
Yes, that's an assumption. It's entered through the cross section in the probability distribution formula.
Right, but how much of that, I mean, would you actually have observed? If you take your particular lens model, right, you calculate your lens in cross section. In principle, this source could have sit could sit anywhere in the multiple image region. Would that?
I don't care about it.
In the particular survey that was actually found, because that introduces an
no, hidden bias. It's not, because again you are using the image separation as a prior, so you don't care about it. So the only thing is that given this image separation, I understand what you're saying actually.
Calculate.
Because for low mass galaxies, you may say the flux ratio will be.
Even for for a given lens, right? I mean, you assume that your optical depth is proportional to your lensing, multiple image lensing cross section by moving the diode. But you, you might have certain configurations you would not have picked up in the survey that this particular lens where you're doing this for. Right, you would not have picked it up because of whatever selection biases there are, which means your probability distribution function is actually different than what you calculate.
Are you saying that you think that in addition to there being theta dependence, which is specifically taken into account, there is dependence upon other aspects of the image configuration which is not taken into account? And so he's collapsing all possible image configurations. Just theta, where it depends on the quadrupole, the orientation of the quadrupole, and such things.
Well, but also, let's say, I mean, if you have a quad, right, in certain, in part of your source plane, this would form a double, but in the given survey where you found this lens, that might not make your flux limit.
Right.
You never have found that space. Mm-hmm. So you actually have to then cut off your mobility distribution.
My guess. That's only a guess here, I have to check it more carefully, is that it won't be a big effect because the cross section is dominated by the large velocity dispersion galaxies.
It's independent of that. I mean, it depends on the brightness of your source, not on the length. Let's say, I mean, you could, in the nasty case, for example, your quad lies just above your flux limit. If you put your source just in the two image region, it could just plummet below your flux limit. You would never have found it. So you cannot count that part of your lensing cross section into your probability distribution function as function of reticule or whatever you do. I mean, you integrate all that space.
So this will matter only if such effects are coupled with redshift. You know. So for example.
No, not only that, you take your lensing cross-section, right, and you assume that your source is kind of randomly distributed behind that particular lens. It could just as well have been in the two-image region.
So magnifications don't depend upon redshifts. And so you would only...
For the choice of an isothermal lipsoid. That's not true for the arbitrary lens.
I believe that the distribution of magnifications is the same, is independent of redshift. That there will be an Einstein normalized to the Einstein wave. Your distribution of magnifications will be the same. I'm not talking about the cross sections. I'm talking about what is likelihood that you have magnification one versus magnification two.
Because you can first introduce a core, you can make it lower redshift.
So
in the region, your average magnification for that particular lens.
You have a core.
The two image region will shrink.
So for a scale free,
there are many issues where the singularized thermal lipsoid is just kind of a special case where all of these things drop out. For an arbitrary lens.
Fortunately, you've demonstrated that all lenses are scale free.
And I say things. Okay.
So with the probability wave is basically coming from the velocity function, right? And from the volume, I guess, as well.
Yes.
You fix the image separation. You say, if I put the lens at the
Yes. fringes. It's the volume. It's the relative distances, and the velocity dispersion function. It's exactly like the classical lens number statistics was, but with conditional probability. It's conditional probability.
You don't care about whether it being a quad or a double.
No, I don't. I care only about the Einstein radius.
Because in principle, for every lens, you could take your best single isothermal ellipsoid model and then do the calculation, integrating over the lensing cross section of every part of the source plane and asking yourself whether the magnification would bring the particular source above your cutoff and only count that part.
Okay, so if this is true, then if eventually we'll have a large enough sample and we will divide the sample to the quads and doubles, we'll see different, we'll run the same test once for only for the doubles and once only for the quads. But you're saying that we will get different results.
No. Not necessarily. No. Probably you only have one object where you calculate the probability.
Right, okay. That's the...
Maybe we should talk about this afterwards.
Okay, that's...
There are some hidden biases that go into these.
That's something that...
So, can you go back to the previous slide? Yeah, so did you use the Q09-57?
No, I didn't. I just saw it, show it here for... But I didn't use it.
Okay. And also that RXA?
No. I drop all the lenses with separation about 3 arc seconds, and this is maybe okay. You all know about the effect of subgroups and clusters. So okay, for curiosity, we also check the effect of quintessence, and as you can see, it's blind to quintessence. So that's actually a good thing about this test. So we don't care about cosmology. Okay, so finally we can use it to constrain the galaxy mass evolution. And here you can see the log likelihood contour as function of the length sigma star evolution. The galaxy sigma star evolution and the evolution in n star in the number abundance of galaxies. And this is assuming standard cosmology. And we can marginalize over the parameters. For example, this is log likelihood as function of the sigma star evolution, and here are the final value after marginalization. And it's quite sensitive to even with the small sample size we had, it's quite sensitive to velocity dispersion evolution. However, it seems that our current measurement is to the 2 sigma level, it's consistent with no evolution in the sigma star of galaxies. And that was mentioned earlier. Here you can see the log likelihood as function of sigma star in the x-axis, and in the y-axis you can see the value of the fiducial value of sigma star at redshift 0, when it normalized to 225 km per second for elliptical and 144 km per second for spirals, and we immediately can reject this. The positive mass evolution is not probable, so we can use it to put lower limit on the fiducial value of sigma star of elliptical at redshift 0, and it's about above at the 2 sigma level it's about 175 km per second. And this is consistent with other lensing statistic measurements from Chaff et al. And other work. It's a positive mass evolution.
Right.
You don't expect that the galaxy become just are going through diet or something. Okay, and then final results. First, we hope that with a bigger sample we can say something more meaningful about galaxy mass evolution, but we show that this test is quite sensitive to galaxy velocity dispersion evolution. We use it to put some constraints. They are not yet meaningful, but it's at least we find that the galaxy velocity dispersion evolution is consistent with zero, and we use it to put a lower limit on the sigma star of elliptical at redshift zero.
What was the FE parameter I mentioned before?
That's the fiducial value. Okay, historically it's the ratio between the velocity dispersion of dark matter and stars, but right now I'm using it as the difference between just the fiducial value of sigma star at redshift zero relative to some arbitrary number, which is 225 kilometers per second for ellipticals. Okay? So we are working very hard to increase the sample size, and it's not easy because measuring lens redshift is quite difficult. And we are using both VLT and KEK, and we already had two runs with the VLT. We observed about 20 lenses, and this is the first 11 lenses we observed with VLT. These are HST images, and the success rate is about 7 from 11, so reasonable. And yeah, for example, two spectra of lens galaxies. So hopefully in the future we can apply this test to unless Leon will kill this test. Hopefully in the future we can use this test to apply to a larger sample of about 50 or 60 lenses, and find some more meaningful constraint on the galaxy mass evolution. And another maybe last thing is that because of the exponential cutoff I mentioned earlier, the errors in this test are dropping faster than square root of n. So increasing the sample size from 14 to 50 may be significant. Okay, but okay, the second subject related to the workshop topic is using gravitational lensing to probe the quasar host galaxy of a redshift of 1.7. And in this nice image from HST, you can see the SDSS 1004 discovered by Inada and Uguri. And you can see the four images of the quasar. The image separation is 14 arc seconds. There is the fifth image of the quasar is just behind the CD galaxy here. There are at least three sets of lensed galaxies in this system.
Is that a radial arc?
Yes, that's a radial arc. It's not clear if it's okay. Maybe I will show a little bit of details. Okay, the four beads here, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
And 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4. And the radial arc, we are not sure if the radial arc is related to this system or it's something else. There are these two here behind the O. And these two are here. We have for the radial arc, no.
Some of these turn out to be jets.
We have redshift for two out of the three systems.
We throw the jets away.
Yep.
Yeah, but you don't know what to
imagine. No, wait. Okay,
the just. Muscles will show.
And in this image you cannot see it, but there are many. So there are many other candidates in this image, so we will try to measure the redshift of many as possible images next January.
Really, those jets are the things like high star formation activity.
You can get this radial arc very easily from this from these sources. However, there are other sources that produce the same radial arc. So I'm not sure it's related to this or some other.
Yeah.
In this stage we don't have enough constraints, but
it's so close to the central galaxy that it's quite difficult to pick it up by morphology to say, oh, I can recognize a feature in this radial thing that looks like it's invisible.
And as you can guess, there are a lot of science that we are doing with this system. And we have another nice thing about the system, that we have another set of constraints that it's actually not available in any other cluster lensing, is that we can measure the time delay between the quasars, and we already measured the time delay between the merging pairs. This is a three years light curve of the A and B images, and we measured the time delay with actually very good accuracy, and hopefully in 10 years maybe 5 years, we may have the other two time delays. Okay. Back to the host of the quasar. You can see very nicely the host of the quasar. The red band here and here. And this is the HST image. And you can see it even nicely, more easily in the NICMOS H-band image. You can see that the quasar are actually very extended. And the angular size of the host galaxy of this quasar is several square arc seconds. And the H-band magnitude of the host galaxy is about 18. So as far as I know, there is no host galaxy that at redshift 1.7 or redshift higher than 1, that using current instrumentation, it's possible to measure the spectra of the host galaxy. And this is probably the only system which, with today current instrumentation, we can measure the spectra of the quasar host galaxy. And for that reason, we will observe this system in next January with NIRSPEC and OSIRIS on KEK. And what you see here is the host galaxy, the colors of the host galaxies are consistent with the SB type galaxy. And here you can see just a template spectra of an SB type galaxy redshifted to redshift of 1.7 with the OSIRIS and NIRSPEC bands overlaid. And we intend to concentrate in the J band. And the main goal of this project is to measure the star formation rate in the host of the quasar. Hopefully we can resolve the narrow line region of the quasar, and maybe the most difficult thing, but I'm quite pessimistic about it, but I will say it anyway, is that we may be able to measure the host galaxy velocity dispersion. And of course that's related to the M sigma relation. And if you have any thoughts about it, please let me know. And, okay, thank you very much.
So, is there any project we're doing, like a spatially resolved?
There are two nights. One for NIRSPEC, which just slit. Maybe we'll put a slit on images A and B. And the second night, we'll use OSIRIS with adaptive optics to do integral field spectroscopy on this region. So the OSIRIS is night is probably it's not clear if we can do all what we want, but I think it's worth trying. System, because that's the only system we really can do it right now. Yep.
So, if you set constraints on the inner density, it's really a radial arc, right? It goes all the way to basically to your Einstein radius.
And we have the fifth image also.
And you have, so yep. You should have extremely good constraint.
Yes. The, okay. So, the currently the we played around with mass models, and first for the concentration people, as you can guess, the scale radius is not very well constrained, so I cannot tell you anything about concentration. The best fit inner profile is about 1.5. Yes.
In density.
In density. Yes.
Is that the slope published in Sharon et al?
Sorry?
Is that new or is that the slope?
No, that's what we measured in the.
Oh, it is.
Did that shoot the entire thing there is a rainbow arc, or just the kind of bright out of it?
Well, I think that in the final fit we removed it because we weren't sure about its nature. We weren't sure it's to which images it relates, if it relates to okay, well, maybe I could go back. We weren't sure if it's related to this this structure, or for example, if we really want, it could be related to these two. But
assume it's not related to anything, because you know that your slope of the deflection angle has to have a certain deflection angle has to have a certain slope as function of radius to be the radial arc over such a large extent, so that gives you maybe I think that slope, and that I think should be more shallow than 1.5. If you assume that that's complete radial arc, I think it should be more probably closer to 1 or something.
Not necessarily. I mean, it's ratchet. So you don't know the ratchet then if you build a.
No. Yes.
Okay.
If it's related to this one, we know the redshift, but.
Yeah, but otherwise you don't.
If it's not, we don't know.
Right.
It's an extended source, so you can't. It's harder to
And this is another thing about this cluster, that there are two separate ways to remove the mass sheet degeneracy. First, the time delay, and second, the multiple. Multiple images at different redshifts.
Sorry? That's if you believe 8 knots.
How much is the H knot?
You can invert. Okay, you can do.
Well, you can measure H knots if you've got the teeth.
It's probably. Paul is not here, but it probably will suffer the same problems that. H naught is beyond us. Just
do you have the velocity dispersion? Maybe
for the galaxy?
Yes.
Masamuna will measure it in January.
Yeah. What was the
sorry?
What's the dispersion?
Oh, you will measure it in next January.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, this one isn't.
Actually, he got time. He got already the time, but it was there was a bad weather or something.
So this one wasn't in Sloan. You don't have Sloan spectra for.
No, it's too faint. But even if you have a Sloan spectra, it will be.
Yeah, 5 by that.
It's the magnitude of the galaxy is 20. It's about 20.
Oh, it's 20.
And the Petrosian magnitude limit for Sloan galaxies is 17.6. So.
Yeah.
Is there an X-ray image?
Yes. Do you want to tell anything about it? About the X-ray images?
Yeah, we have a chamber image and the mass computed from the X-ray images agrees very well with the mass from Sloan galaxy.
So there's no velocity dispersion for the central galaxy?
Not yet.
But there's a redshift measurement for the central galaxy. There's a spectrum of the central galaxy.
Yes, from the original paper of Inada Inuguri.
So is there any sign of any emission lines from the central galaxy? Any sign of any star?
No,
that might give a clue about, it doesn't decide, but it helps to tell you how much confidence you might have in the radio path.
Yes, but but then you have a emission line from the. You may have a emission line from the fifth image. So, actually, Masamune will put, as far as I understand, Masamune will put the slit to get both the. We will try to. It will be very difficult to get the spectra of the fifth image and the galaxy. That's right.
Yeah.
if you get broad emission lights at the redshift lens,
yes,
you know that there's some activity going on, maybe even AGN activity associated with a possible jet.
You might see an X-ray jet as
well. Sorry?
You may see an X-ray jet as well.
So I guess in the X-ray you would see the AGN if there's a so you would actually see it in the X-ray as well.
So how well does the actual mass model fit these, like the quasar images and like some of the other ones that we were showing?
How well?
Yeah.
Like all the other clusters, it's the typical deviation. I must say in the image plane is about 1 arcsecond. Maybe less than that 1 arcsecond because it's smaller cluster, but sorry.
So it's all the cluster lenses are about as
that's what I think. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert, but maybe you can.
I would
What is the best cluster that you have?
99 is only
1 arcsecond. I mean, that's a very complicated.
Yeah, but it has the best data.
True.
So you might be able to fit 4 images in a single cluster very well, because you can possibly fit them all perfectly, and then you add another system, and then it will be
complicated. I can tell you, for example, that the paper about the time delay was delayed by about at least 1 year because of fighting with the modeling. They didn't use the constraints from the galaxies, only from the quasar and the time delay, and it was wasn't so good.
But that mass model, I guess, that didn't include cluster galaxy contributions to the time delay.
Which, yep.
The
flux ratio is not constant. There is a microlensing signal here, and another thing that we will attempt to do actually is I'm doing with Chris Kochanik is that we keep monitoring it in the optical, and we applied, I don't know if you get the time, but we'll apply it for Galaxy and Swift UV observation of the quasars in order to measure also the microlensing in the UV. And try to constrain the accretion disk size in the UV and the optical.
Okay.
You're welcome.